Hi, I'm Greg Lefebvre, and this is The Compulsive Storyteller, a series of short personal stories where we explore the idea that truth can be stranger than fiction. This week's episode is entitled Greg's Eggs. Easter is the best time of year for Greg's Eggs because many of my customers purchase an extra dozen or two to make Easter eggs. I'm Greg, by the way, almost 13 years old and the sole proprietor of Greg's Eggs. My card reads, Greg's Eggs, Grade A, Farm Fresh Every Day. The flip side bears an essay entitled, What is a Grade A Fresh Egg?, which I cribbed from various FDA regulations. A Grade A fresh egg is one that has been refrigerated at 40 degrees after it has been collected and must have an air pocket no larger than 3/16 of an inch. When you peel a hard-boiled egg, the flat end is where the air pocket was. The shell must be free from cracks, dirt, stains, and mottling, and the inside must be free from large blood spots, bloody whites, green whites, rot, stuck yolks, blood rings, embryos, and other foreign materials. My mom sort of discovers fresh eggs. The two of us are driving in the countryside outside Utica one day when she decides to pull into a small poultry farm with a humorous sign out front that reads, Wilson's Poultry Farm, 10,000 employees and counting. My mother is a pretty woman and can talk her way into almost any situation, which today is a large chicken coop. The farmer is put off at first, but then she charms him and purchases a dozen eggs which he refuses to accept money for. Because the eggs are just laid, they are as fresh can be and taste nothing like supermarket eggs. The FDA regulations limit the size of the air pocket in an egg, so grocery stores cheat by waxing the shell, which prevents evaporation and keeps the air pocket the same size for months, but the egg loses much of its farm-fresh flavor. My whole family agrees that these are the best eggs we've ever tasted, and the drive to the farm becomes a weekly outing. Next, my mother decides that anyone who tastes such fresh eggs will want more, and Greg's Eggs is born. I am outfitted with a new red Radio Flyer Kids pull wagon loaded with 24 hand-labeled gray cardboard boxes of eggs. I go to the front door of every house on our street, Bonnie Bray, ring the bell, then begin my pitch. Many of the housewives on the block already know and like me because I'm also their paperboy, delivering the Utica Observer Dispatch, our local newspaper, throughout the neighborhood. Good morning, ma'am. I'm Greg from Greg's Eggs, and I want to give you a free dozen eggs, which were actually laid only yesterday. And if you don't think they're the best eggs you've ever tasted, you don't have to pay for them. But if you do, I hope you will subscribe to a dozen farm fresh Greg's Eggs every week from now on. A cute little kid with a great product is a winning combination. My subscription rate is almost 100%, and the business expands exponentially. Within 2 months, I'm delivering 100 dozen eggs a week. This success is all well and good, of course, but now I have to candle 100 dozen eggs a week. I take 1,200 eggs into our darkened basement, place each one against a lighted hole in a special box. The only light that escapes the box is through a hole slightly smaller than an egg. This lights up the egg itself, and then I have to spin it in both directions, looking for any of those disgusting imperfections that I described on my business card. Before the invention of electricity, this was done with a lit candle in a box, hence the name. Needless to say, sitting alone for many hours in our basement in the dark, focusing all my attention on imperfections inside an endless stream of eggs, is pure misery and not my idea of a good time. I can still hear my mother asking me in a sharp voice, Have you candled all your eggs for the week, Greg? While I candle, I also weigh each egg, and after repeating this thousands of times, I get to the point where I can pick up an egg and know exactly whether it's a medium, large, extra large, or jumbo, a skill that has remained with me throughout my life. The other part of the operation is to decide what to do with all the bloody, green, or rotten eggs. My solution is very restorative. I've never been a big fan of my grade school, called the John F. Hughes School. At two locations along the front facade of the building, there is a blank brick rectangle the height of the school with no windows. Under cover of darkness, I hurl my imperfect eggs, one after another, with great zest, at the middle of one wall. Over time, I create a slimy Jackson Pollock, which I'm very proud of. The other problem with the egg business is that all the eggs have to be delivered by me. I start with a wagon I used to use when I was first enlisting customers, but it's way too small, so I outfit my Schwinn bike with 6 metal baskets. 2 hang down on each side of the front and back tires, then 1 sits in front of the handlebars, and the 6th rests on top of the rack over the back bike tire. When the bike is fully loaded, it can carry 48 dozen Greg's eggs. What I have created, however, is a rolling doomsday machine, a scrambled egg accident waiting to happen because the bike's kickstand isn't designed to handle this sort of load. Every time I leave my bike on the front sidewalk to make a backdoor delivery, my ears are perked for the sound of disaster, and it just takes a small wind or a slowly sagging kickstand and over it goes, leaving a god-awful mess to clean up. If no one has observed the accident, I hand shovel the yolky cardboard mess back into the baskets and roll away, leaving a trail of egg drips on the sidewalk all the way back to my house. But then one day, I discovered the existence of the British triangular two-sided kickstand surrounding both sides of the base of the rear tire. It requires that I lift up and pull back the rear of the bike, heavy with eggs, but after that, it stands solidly impregnable. Problem solved. On another occasion, however, after making a backdoor delivery, I come back around the house to find my bike once again tipped over, but the kickstand is still in place. This is impossible. A real mystery, which is resolved when on a nearby street, I bike past Dick Wheeler, my grade school's biggest bully. The previous year, when I gave him grief for abusing some little kids on the playground, he came charging at me. I ducked down and held out a straight arm to fend him off. In a serendipitous accident, my hand slipped into the pocket of his new jean jacket and ripped it wide open. Instead of thrashing me, he broke into tears, crying, "My mom is going to kill me for this." By bringing the high school bully to tears, I was briefly the hero of the playground. Now, though, it looks like he's finally found a cowardly way to get even. I'm going to have to keep an eye out for him from now on. I am also blessed with some real wacko customers. Halfway up Bonnie Bray, there are 2 large, older, well-maintained houses, which share a landscaped vacant lot between them. One is occupied by the Dreschers, who once tipped me a nickel at Christmas time. The other by the Caligiros, who are big tippers, but rumored to have mob connections. What starts out as a disagreement about who's responsible for cutting a narrow strip of grass in the middle of their shared lot spirals out of control into a real feud. First, there are large deliveries of unordered pizzas to the Caligiros, followed by many false alarm calls that bring multiple fire engines to the Dreschers. The final act by the Caligiros, throwing a bloody bull's penis and testicles onto the hood of the Dresser's new Cadillac, seems to scare them into submission. Trying to deliver eggs and newspapers in the midst of such madness makes me feel like a medic maneuvering in an active war zone. Throughout all the trials and tribulations of Greg's Eggs, the business keeps expanding, and my parents are quite proud of me. At one point, probably engineered by my mother, the Utica Observer-Dispatch newspaper does a big article on my egg business that somehow leaves out any mention of her role in the business. I am by now a freshman at the local public high school, Utica Free Academy. One day, my mom and I are driving in the car. She asks me what I think of Phi Delta Sigma, one of the fraternities at the school. The existence of fraternities in high school is a strange anomaly that is unique to central upstate New York. My answer to her question? Phi Del is a bunch of stuck-up rich kids whose parents buy them their own cars and design their clothes. She seems quietly amused, then informs me that she recently picked up a couple hitchhikers who turned out to be members of the fraternity. They told her that after they saw the newspaper article, they decided to ask me to join. Their words to my mom were something like, "We could really use an entrepreneur in the fraternity." My response? They're going to ask me to join? And my opinion of them immediately turns around. When I join, however, I'm a square peg in a round hole. They are, as I had surmised, spoiled upper-class rich kids, only interested in drugs and alcohol and chasing girls. Within a few months, I'm blackballed out of Phi Delta Sigma, which is fine by me because I have bigger fish to fry. Now that I'm 16, I decide to buy a used milk truck and repaint it with a big Greg's Eggs sign in cursive script on both sides and the back. It occurs to me that with a successful business that will only grow and grow, why do I need to finish high school at all? Sadly, when my parents discover my plans, it spells the end of Greg's Eggs. They present a united front, both insisting that I not only not buy the truck, but I give up the egg business altogether and concentrate on my studies and getting into a good college. I can't believe it. In the blink of an eye, all my hard work and trouble go down the drain. It takes me a long time to recover because for years, my whole identity has been tied up in Greg's Eggs. There is one thing, though, that I've learned in all this for sure. If you want to start a successful business, find a small egg farmer to partner with and start delivering fresh eggs. You can't go wrong. Coda. Many years after the events described here, when I become an artist in New York City, the gallery where I show my work is located in an old landmark building on Broadway in Soho, which has just been purchased by a foreign businessman named Mr. Ito, who is considered to be the king of the egg business in Japan. Because I am having an exhibition of my work in a gallery in the building at the same time that he makes his first visit to survey his property, I'm invited to the grand opening and very Japanese reception for him. It's packed almost exclusively with well-dressed Japanese people. There's a raised dais up front where sits Mr. Ito. Along both sides of the room are long tables covered with sushi laid out in elaborate designs. When the master of ceremony welcomes Mr. Ito, many in the quiet, reverential crowd bow to him. He then speaks to the group at length in Japanese. When Ito's remarks are finished, many of the people in the room form a reception line leading up to the dais. In spite of his business attire, I can't help but see him as a powerful samurai seated on his throne. I get online because I want to tell Ito about my egg business and only wish that I had one of my Greg's Eggs Grade A Farm Fresh Every Day cards with me. When I finally reach the dais, I start to speak to him through an interpreter. Everyone around me looks embarrassed as I start to tell him the story of Greg's Eggs, one professional egg man to another. Ito is not amused and speaks in Japanese to one of the attendants, at which point I'm cut off mid-sentence and gently pushed along to make room for the next person online. Greg's Eggs may be gone, but it's not forgotten, at least by me. I still have the last Greg's Eggs business card in existence anywhere on the planet. Thanks for listening to my story. Now we have something new. Our first listener-submitted story. This one is from Kate. Remember, you can record your own story and email it to us for a chance to be featured. Send your recording to hello@thecompulsivestoryteller.com. Now here's Kate's story.
Years ago, my uncle Greg Lefebvre was visiting Seattle where I was in PA school. After a fun evening, we woke to a dreary wet morning, and Greg and I headed out to my car to deliver him to his next stop. Before departing, I spotted a cell phone in a deep puddle in front of the car and remarked to Greg, "Look, some asshole left their phone in the street. Let's run it over." As I finished the sentence, I suddenly questioned the location of my own phone. I jumped out and retrieved my saturated dead phone from the puddle. As I climbed back into the car, Greg's infectious laugh lines deepened, and he cracked up. He's one of those people you love to make laugh, even when it's at your own expense.
The Compulsive Storyteller is now co-produced by Greg Lefebvre and Fadia Monserrath, who's also arranged the music and created the special effects. Emily Ramon does design, research, editing, and marketing. Peter Kakoma has made our theme music and for many seasons co-produced the show with me. If you enjoyed this week's episode, let us know. You can find us on Instagram and Facebook at The Compulsive Storyteller, and we'd love to hear from you. This podcast is independently produced, so we really appreciate all your help and support. Share the show with your friends, subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, and please leave a review. You can also check out our website, thecompulsivestoryteller.com, for more information. Thanks for listening, and if you didn't like this one, the next one will be another story. All characters and events portrayed in this podcast are based on my truth, with some names and facts changed for privacy. The conversations and dialogues are based on my best memory, but are not word-for-word recreations.